back in the 20th century, almost everybody in Old Fort, North Carolina, who wanted a job, had a job. They could work in a textile mill owned by a company based in Teaneck, New Jersey, or they could work at a furniture factory owned by a company from Danbury, Connecticut. But both those mills shut down.
We went from being a relatively vibrant economy where people could work, live, and get services in the community that they lived in to a community where we were almost a dustbin.
That's Stephanie Swepson Twitty, and she'll be back with us later. But those dustbin stories were common when trade was globalizing in the late 20th century. Leaders of many small southern towns thought the only answer was to search for other large companies that might replace those manufacturing jobs. For most, that was a losing strategy. But the people of Old Fort had a different strategy, a plan so audacious and stubbornly self-sufficient that we decided to make their story the very first episode of Salvation South Deluxe 2 years ago. And here's a quick summary. About 10 years ago, the leaders of Old Fort, black and white alike, came together to build a plan, which by itself was an uncommon occurrence in the rural South. And when they did, they asked themselves a big important question. How can we rebuild an economy that no giant company can take away from us? The people of Old Fort did have a huge asset. Their town sits on the edge of the Pisgah National Forest, 500,000 acres of protected land. So they envisioned building a 42-mile network of trails for hikers and mountain bikers that would connect Old Fort to the Blue Ridge Parkway, which runs right up the middle of the National Forest and attracts more than 16 million tourists every year. In the fall of 2023, when we finished our first show from Old Fort, 7 miles of that 42-mile network was done. The state had allocated $2.5 million that would let them finish the full network by 2026, 3 years faster than the original target of 2029. Land was being set aside for affordable housing. An old furniture warehouse had been bought with plans to create a hub for homegrown startup companies. Hundreds of bikers and hikers and other outdoorsy folks were already flocking to Old Fort every weekend, and small businesses like a bike shop and a brewery and a bakery with crazy good cinnamon rolls had sprung up to serve those visitors and the locals too. Old Fort's plan to rebuild its economy on outdoor recreation was working very well. Then, in September of 2024, Hurricane Helene brought once-in-a-millennium floods to western North Carolina. The Catawba River, which runs right through the middle of downtown Old Fort, surged as high as 20 feet above its normal water level. On our first trip here 2 years ago, I had met Jason McDougald. He is the executive director of Camp Greer, a beautiful summer camp just outside town. Since 1952, Camp Greer has been teaching kids from the second grade through the 12th grade outdoor skills every summer, and Jason has managed the camp for more than a decade. He was also in that group of visionaries behind the Trail Network project.
You know, the storm, it was kind of two waves. You know, there was like this kind of tropical depression or whatever you call it that came through first. And you know, that was Wednesday. And so when we woke up on Thursday, already, I've never seen flooding, you know, to that level here at camp, you know, in the 11 years since I've been here.
After a while, he managed to hike into town.
But then when I got in there, you know, and I saw what condition Old Fort was in, I mean, there was a foot of mud in downtown Old Fort. It smelled like the natural gas smell was just something I'll never forget, you know, just huge gas leaks, people in town, you know, in their bare feet and house coats, you know, basically what they had on when their home washed away, were just kind of wandering around in town, kind of shell-shocked. And it was, you know, no communication, cell towers were down, fiber was cut, roads were missing, railroad tracks were suspended, you know, in midair. And it just looked like it was a disaster zone.
I had a million questions. Would Old Fort's grand plan survive? Or would they have to start over from scratch? I wanted answers, so more than 5 months after the floods, I headed back to this little town of 900 people in western North Carolina. I'll tell you what I saw and heard. I think you might be surprised. I'm Chuck Reese, and welcome to Salvation South Deluxe, a series of in-depth pieces that we add to our regular podcast feed, hoping to unravel the untold stories of the Southern experience by letting you hear the authentic voices that make this region truly unique. Welcome to Old Fort. That soothing sound you hear behind me is Jarrett Creek. I'm standing in the driveway of the same house I stayed in 2 years ago. Back then, there was about 20 feet of green grass between this driveway and the creek bank. Today, that lawn is gone, so is half the driveway, thanks to Hurricane Helene. Helene first made landfall in Florida at 11:10 p.m. on Thursday, September 26. By then, the ground here in Old Fort was already soaked. A week before, 2.5 inches of rain had fallen, according to National Weather Service data, and on Wednesday the 25th, another 1.1 inches fell, and it rained all night. By the time Helene hit Florida on the night of the 26th, another 3.5 inches had fallen on Old Fort.
When we woke up on Thursday, I've never seen flooding, you know, to that level here at camp, you know, in the 11 years since I've been here. Yeah, the water was already over our bridges going into camp, but I've never seen that. And that was when the hurricane was still, you know, off the coast. And so that morning was kind of where I thought, like, okay, this is going to be bad.
A few guests for an already scheduled weekend retreat were arriving, but Jason and his camp staff decided to ask them to head home while they could. The staff headed home too. Only Jason stayed at Camp Greer, hoping to get some sleep in the director's house, which sits about 100 feet from Jarrett Creek by the gate into the camp.
Yeah, the storm kind of hit in the evening, and I think we lost power at like 3 or 4 in the morning. And it was, you know, obviously it was hard to sleep that night because it was, you know, windy and it was just pouring rain. And so I would get in my truck and just kind of ride up the camp road to the first bridge and just see, you know, how it was. All those creeks and streams came right back up. The water was back over the bridges.
The rain never stopped that night.
Friday morning, I got up and, you know, we'd lost power overnight. Got up about 6 or 7. I'd packed a bag the night before just in case I had to get out. And so I just got up and made coffee and, you know, was just looking out the window, really, watching it rain. And about 8:30 was, you know, I heard a crack out our back of the house. And a tree had fallen. It came, basically cut the director's house in half while I was in it. And so that, you know, opened a huge hole in the house. It just started pouring in rain.
Jarrett Creek typically runs under Highway 70 and then flows into Mill Creek, which runs parallel to the highway. After the tree fell, Jason grabbed his bag and got in his truck. He sat in the driveway of the director's house and watched Jarrett Creek rise so high it overflowed the highway. And then he watched Mill Creek rise until it submerged the railroad tracks.
Over the next 2 hours, from like 8 to 10, you know, you could really see the water coming up. I mean, yeah, this was the heart of the storm. Right around 10 o'clock, there must have been some kind of debris jam on some of the bridges because the water really started to come up quickly. In about 30 minutes, it had risen several feet, you know, 4 or 5 feet. And then once something happened, like that debris jam must have broken loose, or a bridge, you know, road around a bridge, you know, cut loose. Because as soon as that water, as quickly as it came up, it went down. And so I think that wall of water is what took out, you know, a lot of homes and businesses in town, you know, downstream from it.
When we first visited Old Fort in 2023, we met Wendy Lewis, the proprietor of Go-Go Cinnamon Rolls, the home of those crazy good treats I mentioned earlier. Wendy's husband, Jerry, pastors Grace Community Church, which sits halfway between Old Fort and the town of Marion, 10 miles east. Where they live in Old Fort sits on the north side, the high side of the Catawba River. Their basement flooded, but their house suffered no other damage. So Jerry and Wendy got in their truck to see what was going on in town.
So we drove over to where you could look out on the middle of town, and it was unbelievable. Cars were floating.
I guess it was about 11 or 12, you know, the storm kind of started to pass. And so the first thing I did, I still couldn't walk up our road because it was still kind of a river. So I just kind of bushwhacked up the ridge to get into camp.
Camp Greer was founded 70 years ago on land that's about 100 feet higher than Highway 70. Up at the camp, there's a dam on Jarrett Creek that creates a lake where summer campers now swim and paddle. The dam was holding fast.
I really couldn't believe my eyes. When I got up there, I was really shocked by how little damage, you know, camp sustained. All of our buildings were okay. We had a couple of trees down on the road and that kind of thing. And obviously, you know, trees on power lines and stuff. But like our buildings, like our commercial kitchen, all of our lodges, you know, I mean, everything was fine. And so I was just like, thank goodness.
This was news Jason wanted to share, but the only method of communication available was literal word of mouth.
And so I decided to come back to camp and kind of hunker down here for that first day. And then it was just kind of like, okay, survival, like let's, you know, assessing what's good on the ship. You know, it's like, okay, we got this freezer full of food. We've got some generators up at camp. We're, you know, very heavily resourced. And so from that point, it was just trying to use what we had to conserve what we had and working to rebuild our road so we could get in and out.
The rain continued to fall all day. By Saturday morning, another 6 inches had dropped and it wasn't letting up. With their home safe, but Go-Go shut down, Jerry and Wendy Lewis wanted to find ways to help their neighbors. Jerry decided to head for the McDowell County Emergency Operations Center over in Marion to see how he could pitch in. But the bridge on Highway 70 toward Marion was out. His only hope was to cross the bridge over the Catawba in downtown Old Fort so he could reach Interstate 40 toward Marion. The bridge was damaged and closed, but it was passable. Jerry went looking for Old Fort's mayor at the time, Pam Snipes, hoping she would give him permission to cross it. He found her in the middle of town, directing traffic.
I asked her if she would let me go across one of the bridges and go get us some help, and she agreed.
When Jerry arrived at the Emergency Operations Center in Marion, he walked in just as Will Keller, the county's emergency services director, was beginning a meeting with his team of responders.
I've known Will for years, and when I walked in, it was the first what they call control group meeting. We were all introducing ourselves. I just walked really in on that meeting, and when they got to me, Will said, and Jerry will be leading our humanitarian response for the county. What? Wow. And so immediately, everything in my world shifted.
He did not refuse this emergency appointment.
He gave me a team and he said, Jerry, we have a warehouse and we will not have a second disaster on top of the first. We need water. We need food, and the state is out. This is their third storm. We have three simultaneous responses by the state. They've already informed me they have no water. They have no food to send our way. No MREs, no water.
So Jerry, who has pastored Grace Community Church for 25 years, turned to other churches in North Carolina for help.
So thankfully, just what, 2 or 3 weeks prior, I had been I'd led a meeting of pastors of the largest churches in the state in our denomination. I just jumped on a text to them and I said, we need help and we need it now. We have no water, we have no food, we have no power. And so they pastor very large churches. So that was on a Saturday. They put word out to their people, don't show up tomorrow without water, food, and diapers. And we had a great team.
The county superintendent of schools and the president of MacDowell Tech Community College also showed up to pledge their resources.
And we got to work.
With no electricity, the team's first priority became getting help to people whose medical conditions required power. Seniors and others who needed oxygen support, and people with kidney disease who required dialysis.
We had to have an O2 shelter. We had 50 people that if they didn't get to power, they could die. These are older people on oxygen and there was no power. And so by 7 p, we had it set up, completely powered, ready to go. We had 50 people that had to get to Hickory for dialysis. So part of my job was to, by Sunday morning, they had to be on their way.
That happened too.
Wendy, then, we knew we couldn't open the business. We had product ready to sell. So she grabbed product. She joined me at the EOC, and she started cooking breakfast and lunch for 200 people a day. So,
wow.
So what she and I did for the next 2 weeks was, it was a complete redirect in our lives. Everything.
Jerry and his team had access to 3 warehouses they could use to store supplies and quickly move them out to residents who needed them.
By Sunday evening, we had our first semi roll in of supplies. We had 150 volunteers. We set up an inventoried warehouse with full, complete, everything you would imagine in a warehouse. The forklifts, everything organized, palletized.
Meanwhile, at Camp Greer, Jason McDougald and his staff were determined to turn the camp into a refuge for displaced residents.
It took a couple of days just kind of to get oriented, you know, like we had, you know, some generators here at camp, and we were able to get those hooked up to our well so we could have running water. We were able to get another generator hooked up to our ice machine because we were really wanting to make sure that we preserved that food that we had. Our kitchen staff were really thought ahead because they had packed a bunch of coolers with ice prior to the storm, anticipating that we would lose power. And so that was, you know, in our walk-in freezer. And so that was great. And so for a couple of days, it was really just us, you know, really through the weekend, like Friday to Monday morning was just us working to stabilize, you know, the systems. Our maintenance staff got back and were able to get into our machines and start pushing our road back to the bridge so that we could get access. After a couple of days, we were able to get, you know, our road repaired, you know, enough that we could get in and out with vehicles and UTVs. And then we were fortunate enough to get a Starlink from someone. And so we were able to quickly get communications, and we started working on a larger generator.
Jason's stepfather, who lives in Atlanta, called some friends who own a company that supplies equipment to utility companies.
They were able to put one of their staff on finding us a generator, and they were able to source one and get it up here that week. And so by the end of the week, we had basically a hospital generator, you know, running the main camp, which is amazing. And we ran off that generator power for about a month.
Within days, Camp Greer was feeding displaced residents and providing a clean place for them to take hot showers and do laundry. Communications were still out, though.
It was back to the analog days. I mean, we painted a 4x8 sheet of plywood and stuck it in downtown Old Fort with an arrow on it.
What did it say?
It was like food, showers, this way. It was really hard to get the word out to folks, but that really worked well. We were doing a little over 100 meals a day for our neighbors, and then probably about 50 showers a day for neighbors, and 20 to 30 loads of laundry a day. We pretty much operated in that mode for all of October and November. About 60 days of just really, fast-paced relief.
But not everyone who was dirty and hungry could get to Camp Greer. Jerry Lewis remembers one night that week at the Emergency Operations Center when a little incorrect planning resulted in the preparation of hundreds of meals, but no one to feed them to.
I speak Spanish fluently. So when I went out that night, pitch dark, I go into this Spanish neighborhood trailer park. I got my cell phone. And then I said, "Lord, just give me somebody. Give me one person. Just give me one person." And I had back of my pickup truck full of food. House number three. Out comes this guy. Told him what I'm doing. He said, "I know all the people who need food." He jumped in the truck. "Here we go. House to house." He said, "Let's stop here. Let's stop there."
The need Jerry encountered that night was deeper than he had anticipated.
We found a family that had been rationing a granola bar since Friday.
You heard that right. One granola bar, portioned out bit by bit over several days.
"Ran out of food." He said, "You don't have any more?" I said, "No." He said, "But look at all those children on that porch. They haven't eaten. They haven't eaten." And I said, "All right, tomorrow we serve lunch. There will be an entire delivery crew here. They will deliver food to everybody."
With the help of many volunteers, Jerry and his team make good on their promise.
We got to them with hot food. We found another family. And when we knocked on her door, she was crying because she said, "I just told my kids I've used every bit of food we have. And we're out." And we brought her food. Enough hot meals for every person in her family.
This was not a one-night miracle. With the supplies they had warehoused, the people of McDowell County mounted a well-organized operation that fed people for weeks.
When our people showed up, we had hundreds of volunteers, some of them who had lost everything, handing out food to people. That's just how it happened. And it was amazing those kinds of things that happened. And nobody cared who got the credit. That was the cool piece. We were just trying to get it done.
We'll be back after this short break, and we'll talk about how Old Fort is also rising up to meet the longer-term challenges brought by Hurricane Helene. Welcome back to Salvation South Deluxe. Here we are again on the bank of Jarrett Creek. Earlier, I mentioned how the creek washed out the driveway next to it, and it'll cost about $30,000 to repair, I'm told. But that amount is barely a speck of dust against the $59 billion in damage that Hurricane Helene dropped on this state, according to the North Carolina Office of State Budget and Management. As I said, Jarrett Creek flows into Mill Creek on the other side of old U.S. Highway 70 from where I'm standing, and a Norfolk Southern rail line parallels Mill Creek. When the creeks merged on that day in September and roared toward downtown Old Fort, where Mill Creek flows into Catawba River, the rail line that ran beside Mill Creek was destroyed. Not just in one place, but for miles. The tracks are twisted like pretzels. Houses alongside the railroad and into downtown Old Fort were destroyed. The cataclysmic flooding destroyed more than 50 homes and damaged about 175 more in and near the town. We'll post many photographs of the damage on SalvationSouth.com along with this episode. Across the whole of western North Carolina, 560 homes were destroyed and more than 2,000 were damaged. The town folk in Old Fort now call it the apocalypse. They are devastated still, and they will feel that way, I expect, for a long time to come. But when the apocalypse came, they held fast to the most important rule for living life. They loved their neighbors. They made sure people were warm and dry, that they were fed and sheltered, that they could take a shower and wash the mud out of their clothes, and they kept doing it for about 2 months.
When something like this happens and you see people drop everything to come to help and to lend a hand and to be selfless, it gives you hope, right? And hope means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But for me, that's hope that generally we all want to see others do better.
Philip Bell is the project manager of the Old Fort Strong Fund. While Camp Greer was still feeding people, the nonprofit that runs it established the Old Fort Strong Fund to help people who had lost their homes and businesses rebound more quickly. They immediately turned to outdoor recreation, their new economy's bread and butter, to raise money that would go directly into the hands of Old Fort residents so they could rebuild their homes and repair their businesses. They announced the Old Fort Strong Endurance Festival, and they invited mountain bikers and trail runners either to ride or run a series of loop trails 11 weeks after Helene. There would be 200 spots for mountain bikers and 200 for trail runners. To sign up, you had to commit to raise at least $1,500. If every available spot was filled and each person raised the minimum, it would produce $600,000 for the fund. Slots for runners sold out within 3 days, and the bicycle slots within a week and a half. By Sunday morning, when the last of the runners and riders straggled in, they had raised $950,000. About 6 weeks later, when I interviewed Philip, the total was up to about $1.1 million. And more than 400,000 of that was already committed to help people replace cars, find housing, and make repairs. And the need is still greater than the Old Fort Strong Fund can provide.
The plan is to keep the fund going. You know, we're applying for grants. We're working with foundations and leveraging our network to continue to try to add to that number and, yeah, get more money out the door to families in need.
More than 100 people have applied to the fund for help so far, and more keep coming. Philip Bell talks to every one of them so he can understand what they need and then try to get it to them.
You know, I have one, you know, single dad, right, with a 12-year-old daughter, and he was living downtown, and you know, the water came through and essentially washed his home away. A mother of two, is living in a camper right now with a dog and her boy and her daughter, 7 and 5. And their car washed away, their house washed away. So as a fund, we're helping with cars as well, helping her get a car to replace her so she can get to and from work and take her child to daycare.
Philip has become a logistical wizard of sorts.
No one gets turned away. it's just the bottleneck of, you know, communicating with vendors, contractors,
yes.
and writing
yes.
the right checks and going to Lowe's and working with credit unions and things like that, that just kind of hold it up. I've been boots on the ground here, Chuck. There is an immeasurable need that's well above what we've raised so far.
Philip has no plans for a job change anytime soon. He will keep working to provide what people need right now. But what will the people of Old Fort need a decade from now? When Salvation South first told the story of this town in 2023, the focus was on getting the funding to build that 42-mile network of trails. If we built it, they believed, the hikers and mountain bikers would come by the thousands. Old Fort wanted to make itself the next great trail town. That phrase comes from the plans for one of the two major projects Old Fort's coalition of big thinkers were planning. Projects that would ensure a sustainable economy built around outdoor recreation. One of those projects is called the Catawba Vale Innovation Market, the transformation of a 60,000 square foot former furniture warehouse. That building sits in the middle of downtown and will become home for startup manufacturing operations. A furniture manufacturer is already slated to start making its products there. It will also house the McDowell Chamber of Commerce, a digital film studio, and an event and hospitality center, plus a retail food operation on the ground level. The second project is called Greer Village. If the innovation market is designed to incubate small businesses needed to serve an outdoor recreation economy, then Greer Village is meant to be that economy's central destination. It will welcome and house and feed and even brew beer for everyone who shows up with a mountain bike, trail running shoes, or a pair of hiking boots. On 800 acres adjacent to the existing summer camp, Greer Village will include affordable housing for the local workforce. The town lacks a hotel, so the plans include short-term rental cabins for tourists and land that will support sustainable farming practices and locations for retail and other small businesses. McDowell Tech Community College has added a certificate program in trail construction and sustainability with free tuition for anyone who lives in the county. Greer Village will have classroom spaces and housing for students.
There's going to be three different products. So one product, it's basically straight visitor lodging. You know, like we don't have a hotel. We need places for people to come in and stay. So these are, there's plans for up to 10, but we're starting out with five cabins. So five will be built in phase one, and these will be five bedroom, five bath. Everybody will have an ensuite kind of set up.
The second part will cater to the local workforce or those who aspire to be part of it.
So like imagine, you know, groups coming in to Old Fort to take classes at the trail school. So these are young adults who are 18 to 24 who want to get into the outdoor rec economy. They're taking classes at the community college, working part-time and living with us. So below market rate, student housing.
The third place will greet people as they arrive to hit the trails.
This is where you go to check in, retail, tap room, bike shop, coffee shop, amphitheater. And then there's going to be some long-term below the market rate rentals for like seasonal Forest Service crews or, you know, people that just be below market rate rentals that are here working on public lands or here working for us or, you know, whatever.
My assumption as I headed to Old Fort for this visit was that these projects would be delayed thanks to Hurricane Helene. Both of the major construction sites for Greer Village sit directly across the highway from the devastation of the flooding along Mill Creek, so I didn't expect to see cranes and bulldozers and excavators running full speed when I returned to Old Fort. But they were. Jason McDougald said he expects cabin rentals to begin in early 26, with other components of the project opening later that year. The Catawba Vale Innovation Hub is a project of Eagle Market Streets Development Corporation. That's the nonprofit economic development organization that Stephanie Sweps and Twitty has run for decades. When I asked how much delay she expected, she told me Helene had actually accelerated her timeline. She expects the Innovation Hub renovation to begin at the latest in January of 2026, and for the building to be fully leased by December of 27. But Stephanie was also proud of how the Innovation Hub building, which her nonprofit bought back in 2020, was critical to the relief effort in the immediate aftermath of Helene.
About 3/8 inch of silt is the only thing that happened to this massive structure on the ground level there. It took the National Guard roughly about 9 hours of work to clean up our building, whereas our neighbors to the left and neighbors to the right of us, it took weeks for them to be back online.
America's biggest producer of hardwood, plywood, and veneers, Columbia Forest Products, is based in Greensboro, North Carolina, and it has a manufacturing plant in Old Fort. Helene recovery efforts dramatically increased the demand for Columbia's products, but it also damaged its storage facility.
And the town came to Eagle and said, look, Columbia Forest Products needs to get back to the business of producing wood panels, and they need their warehouse space, but we still have tremendous emergencies, disaster relief products, and we need to move those products. Will you support us? There was no question in my mind that we would not do that.
Columbia started moving products into the Innovation Market building, and in the process, the building found itself with a new nickname.
Our joke, that running joke, we've started calling it Noah's Little Ark. It's sitting here in the midst of all of this decimation to the left and the right of it.
Here is what I believe after my second visit to Old Fort. Almost a decade ago, Old Fort's people came together in an inclusive way to envision a new kind of economy for their town. Because they did that, then worked hard, very hard, to do the detailed planning and pull together the needed resources, Old Fort will surely come back faster and stronger than many other rural towns in western North Carolina. Helene may have dashed their spirits for a while, but because of the work they were already doing, it did not dash their hopes.
I think that our momentum, our emotional momentum about how we were going forward as a community to build this, my words, magnanimous economic engine that was going to drive us into the 21st, post-21st century, got a little dull. You know, as we walked the streets of Old Fort and saw perpetually days on end the debris and the carnage left in the wake of Helene, it was really hard to think about all of that vibrancy that we had envisioned for outdoor recreation and activity that we were looking to spur this economy.
But they are finding salvation by diving back into the work.
That is what I've been telling all my teammates. Eye on the prize, y'all. Eye on the prize. We got a building to build. Let's build that building. Keep our eye on the prize.
When 2026 comes around, Salvation South plans to head back to Old Fort, North Carolina. We want to do annual progress reports because we find ourselves in a unique position. By covering Old Fort over the long term, a town that could become a model for rural economic development in the South, we hope to provide some inspiration for the leaders of other small towns in the South as they face their own economic challenges. We have many people to thank for their help and cooperation in producing this episode. Jerry and Wendy Lewis, who are respectively the pastor of Grace Community Church and the proprietor of Go-Go's Cinnamon Rolls. Go-Go's first reopened 3 weeks after the storm, and now, thanks to a brand new temporary bridge opening on Highway 70, it's back to its old ways. That means, although its official closing time is 4 p.m. every day, you're likely to see the sold-out sign appear hours before that. But if you get there in the morning, you'll be sure to get something delicious to eat and a broad smile from Wendy. And don't be surprised if you see a few tears in the eyes of the Go-Go's pre-Helene regulars as they return.
One particular, there was two state troopers who came in. I'd never seen them before. And I just walked in and they said, "We keep coming in because of the smile. Y'all all are just smiling, and we just keep coming in because everywhere we go, it's just, you know, people have the long faces." And I'm like, well, right now, that's really all that we can give is smiles.
And of course, those crazy good cinnamon rolls. We must also thank Philip Bell, the project manager of the Old Fort Strong Fund. Also, Stephanie Sweps and Twitty, the CEO of Eagle Market Streets Development, which for 30 years has worked to increase economic opportunity for disenfranchised people in North Carolina. And last, but certainly not least, we thank Camp Greer Executive Director Jason McDougald, who spent hours making sure that we got a close look at the damage Helene did, not only in Old Fort, but across all of McDowell County. And his wife, Ellen McDougald, whose hospitality and jokes make every visit a genuine delight. You've been listening to Salvation South Deluxe, proudly produced in cooperation with Georgia Public Broadcasting and its network of 20 stations around our state. Every Wednesday, we add a new 3-minute commentary about Southern stuff to our podcast feed, and every month or so, we add longer deluxe stories such as the one we've just told you. I'm Chuck Reese, your host and the editor-in-chief of Salvation South, which you can find 24/7 at salvationsouth.com. That's where you can also find Stacy Reese's photographs of the damage and the recovery in Old Fort and McDowell County and in parts of Asheville. Our producer is Jake Cook, who also composed our theme music. GPB's director of podcast is Jeremy Powell. And none of this could have happened without some wonderful people like GPB's Bert Wesley Huffman, Sandy Malcolm, and Adam Woodleaf. We'll be back next month with another full-length episode of the Salvation South podcast.